Now entering Nerdist.com.
Big Pop Fun.
Recorded live in California, USA. It's Big Pop Fun with Tom Wilson. The show that loves big, likes pop, and has fun. Now from the Wilson World Studios, here's Tom.
La 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 la. That's how Christmas specials used to begin when I was a kid on TV. But welcome, everybody. Welcome to the Big Pop Fun with Tom Wilson first annual Christmas special. This is the first annual special that I'm not saying I'm doing it annually. We'll see about a second one or whatever. I may go Kwanzaa next year. But for right now, welcome to the Big Pop Fun Christmas special. And I hope you're having a wonderful holiday season. No matter what you celebrate, I celebrate Christmas. So it's a Christmas special. Go figure. Most of my memories of Christmas, of course, having children and a wife are around those magical times. And my memories of a kid for Christmas, of course, surround my hometown, Philadelphia, a wonderful city. Philadelphia is one of the, though a major city, it's one of the big secrets of America. It is a beautiful city full of great people. Philadelphia is it has such magnificent architecture and the arts and Philadelphia has this wonderful little small chip on its shoulder, which makes it work harder because it's right down the road, about an hour and a half from New York City. So Philadelphia has a thing about it that which says, hey, we're as good as them. We have art museums too. We have excellent art museums. We have excellent galleries. We have a lot of beautiful things going on. We, of course, the young guys in Philadelphia, we're as tough as them. You know, but there's Philadelphia is much, much more than those guys going, hey, we're as tough as New York. Come on down, get something. Because let's face it, Philadelphia is very easily stereotyped as hoagies, cheesesteaks, and Rocky. Or I should say in Philadelphian, hoagies, cheesesteaks, and Rocky. Because anytime you see anything that happens in Philadelphia, or especially sporting events, you watch an Eagles game or something. I live in California now, so you watch a Phillies game or an Eagles game, and of course you're watching it for those – you're almost watching it for the commercial breaks where they show you a vista of the city or something. And of course everyone goes to a cheesesteak and the statue of Rocky, because that's what just a logo of Philadelphia might – forget the Liberty Bell thing. Hey, forget Independence. George Washington, whatever, Thomas Jefferson. Hey, cheesesteak, Rocky. That's what we know you as. So the Rocky statue is still there. They had a Rocky statue. Well, they still do. But the Rocky statue was at the top of the steps of the art museum there in Philadelphia, which was – nice, but the Philadelphia Art Museum, which was, I guess, built, what was it, late 1800s, finally said, pardon me, could someone possibly remove the Rocky statue from the top of our steps? So they finally did. They took Rocky down. They didn't take him away. He's still there. He's about 20 or 30 feet at the bottom of the steps. You can still take your picture with the Rocky statue. Everyone does it. I've done it. But the art museum is still known for those steps. Well, I'll tell you, the young sixth grade class, they come up in their school bus. They park at the bottom of those stairs to go to the art museum for their class trip. Do the kids care about seeing Renoir paintings? No, the kids get off that school bus and en masse, they run up the stairs. They do jumping jacks. They jump up and down at the top of the steps, just like Rocky, and they think the class trip is over. But no, they go inside to have a docent talk to them about Marcel Duchamp. Anyway, but that's Philadelphia. It's a great city, and yes, the people have their own way of speaking. Philadelphia translation, I'll give you a couple of lines. You, go down to Wawa, give me a crimpet. Pardon me, would you go to a convenience store and get me a delicious snack? Hey, you's going down ashore or what? Are any of you planning on going to the beach? So, yes, there is a different way of talking. Philadelphians communicate eagerly and with great – well, they're passionate about it. Look, they're so eager to communicate, they will keep the conversation going no matter what you say. They love to – I mean, they have this distinct method where they say what right in the middle of anything because they have to try to – answer their own question to keep this thing going because they're in a rush to get an answer. It's Philadelphia. Let's go. You know? So they'll just, hey, where are you going? What? Downtown? Huh? Where? What? What? Out to a movie? Where you going? What? Car ride? Nowhere. I'm going nowhere. What? Nowhere. Why? What? Why not? Why? What? What? You don't feel like it? Huh? No, I don't. What? 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 You got no friends to meet with? What? What? The earth might open and swallow your car. Hey, I'm not going anywhere, all right? What? What? What do you need? Money? Huh? What? What? You want me to watch the kids? What? What do you, what? 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 What do you need? I don't need it. I need you to leave me alone. I'm reading a book. What? What? I'm driving you crazy now? What? What are you? What are you tired or something? What? Oh, I'm what? I'm bothering you? Okay, Mr. Big Shot, going nowhere, reading a book. Fine. So that's okay. It's stereotypical, but it's fun, and it is Philadelphian. So many of my Christmas memories are in Philadelphia, downtown, going with my parents. It was just like a Christmas story. It was just a Christmas story was shot in Cleveland, Ohio, beautiful downtown area. Well, Philadelphia has a great downtown area, and you would go to Wanamaker's, which is right there near City Hall at Chestnut Street. And Wanamaker's had a light show. And in a department store in Philadelphia, Wanamaker's had a gigantic pipe organ. Because I guess, you know, whenever it was built, they figured, hey, what a great thing to put in while people shop for pants to just, you know, play a pipe organ. So they had this gigantic pipe organ, and they had a big, I don't know how tall it was. As a kid, it seemed like it was 12 feet tall. It was probably 3 feet tall, but it was a brass or bronze, probably brass, an eagle in this atrium. Because everything in Philadelphia is Eagles. I mean, not the sports team. I mean, Liberty and musket balls and tri-corner hats and Valley Forge and George Washington and everything. So it was the Wanamaker's Eagle. And for whatever reason, for this light show and the organ concert thing, you tried to get near the eagle. I don't know why. I think that was in the center of the thing. So you felt like, oh, that's a great, great place to be standing at the eagle to watch this wonderful light show. And it really was terrific as a kid. It was the pipe organ would play loudly, filling this whole space. And it was a light show of toy trains and soldiers and Christmas trees and all kinds of things. And that's what you did. And then, of course, you got in line, a 7-hour line to see Santa. I'm surprised that we never camped out. Who came up with that thing where you bring a tent and sleeping bags and just camp out to do a concert? It must not have been in Philadelphia in like in the late 60s, because we would just stand there forever in snowsuits or something, just waiting to see Santa through the little village of the mannequin people with their moving arm, the elves with the arm that just goes up and down, the little cobbler who's fixing shoes for children at Christmas, because what child didn't want a pair of shoes at Christmas time. Okay. But that was a part of the city that was magical to me. It was magical because all of my Christmas memories were going downtown in the cold air and walking around and seeing all the windows lit up and finally waiting 7 hours to see Santa, assisted by a mannequin elf with a robot arm fixing fake shoes. Then I grew up. Then I was a young stand-up comic, going to the same places down Chestnut Street and working at nightclubs, working at a place called the Comedy Works. The Comedy Works was at 2nd and Chestnut Street, down in the Old City part of Philadelphia, Old City part of Philadelphia. You know what I'm talking about. It's Everywhere is not a bar. It is a bar and grill, G-R-I-L-L-E. And if you think your town made up that whole adding E to stuff to make it old, it was Philadelphia, believe me. Ye old CVS, whatever it is, it started in Philadelphia with the adding bar and grill, or old D. But anyway, so I was working at a place called the Comedy Works, which was 2nd and Chestnut Streets on top of a Middle Eastern restaurant. It was at the third floor, and the second floor was belly dancers, and the third floor was the comedy room, and the first floor was restaurant. So often the show would end at, you know, I would get out of there 1:30 in the morning, but even at Christmas time, the lights would still be on, or some of the, you know, silver bells across Market Street as I ran, and I had to run to a train. Because the last train, I think, that went out from that train station was something, you know, 1:52 a.m., something like that. And I got out at 1:30, and I was 15 blocks away and just had to book, swinging my guitar in a duffel bag and whatever I had, and just running to catch this train. So when I think about that time, at Christmas time, I just think, I'm a guy, okay? So we all think about beefs we had with some dude or fights. I don't know why it comes to, how come guys always, we all have our ridiculous fight stories, and it's wrong. It's just absolutely primitive, but we know fighting is wrong. It's a waste of time. There are so many better things to do, better ways to spend our time. And then you get mixed up in some kind of fight, and you spend the next 3 months telling everybody about it, and it sticks in your mind so much that I remember it now. From years ago, oh, you could list them off, just that time, and and if something happens with somebody, you'll tell anyone you meet. Then they'll come up, hi, my name is Tom. Let me tell you about this guy that got in my face after it was second show Friday a couple weeks ago, and they don't care, but you just have this. I was near battle, I was almost in a war. I must share this. Well, anyway, as a young guy, in fact, everybody, let's face it, I think at your school too, did you read The Outsiders? As boys and girls in high school, we read S.E. Hinton's book, The Outsiders, written by a young girl, S.E. Hinton. I think she was maybe 17 when she wrote it, a girl, but she was so wise about boys. She wrote this book about tough young guys as a girl. But she knew a lot about them, that the boys all put on a tough demeanor, that we all have to look cool for the other guys when we're young. We're so desperate to just be thought of as something. Yes, I'm in the club of men. Look at me. Yeah, I'm a man, when we're really not. And we all know that boys have sensitive, big hearts and fragile dreams. And most of them, I think, the wish to stay gold. That was it in The Outsiders. Stay Gold Pony. It was Pony Boy Curtis, right? He was the lead character, and his brothers, Soda Pop and Dal. If you haven't read the book, read it. It's a great book. But that's a cliche now. Stay Gold Pony. It's a cliche joke. But in The Outsiders, it actually means something. So, well, this goes back to my Christmas memory. So I actually used The Outsiders and its lessons in real life. See, years ago, like I told you, I was a baby comic. Larry Miller calls us baby comics, and he's right. We were young guys. And I was performing at the club, and it's 1:30, 2 o'clock in the morning, and I had to run to catch this train home. Because at that point, I was living back at my parents' house when I was like 19. Imagine that, in the suburbs. So many nights, anyway, I found myself walking on Market Street at 1:30 in the morning. But you had to move along, because Market Street was pretty funky and some unusual characters were there. So you just had to, you know, go down with great dispatch. I'm catching a train. Get out of my way. And many times I had to run because I had 10 minutes to go 15 blocks, and I jumped on a moving train, throwing a guitar on there and just hopping on. Which, and it happened plenty of times, because if I missed the train, it was taking a bus to 69th Street Terminal, taking a trolley. You had to wait until 4:30 in the morning, and I know you care deeply about that in my story. Look, on the Outsiders night, I was walking too slowly for the environment. It was Christmas time. I was okay. Maybe the show went well, and I was, you know, smelling the subway grates as if they were bouquets of roses. Certain that that show was going to propel me in show business right here where I am, to the exact a bit lower middle of show business. Or maybe the show went badly. I don't know. It was a Christmas show, and a lot of people got too drunk, and I was mumbling to myself about the incredibly huge mistake I'd made with my life. But anyway, I wasn't moving fast enough. I wasn't moving with enough attention to where I was. I wasn't moving with purpose. Maybe I was looking at the Christmas lights. But when I got to a dark corner with nothing around for blocks, this guy walks out of the shadows and stops in front of me about, you know, 10 feet away, and he's staring at me. That's not right, right? It's 22 in the morning, and the guy should be kind of walking by, and we should do that, giving each other about 5 feet of space on the sidewalk. But no, he came out from around a corner and is looking at me. So I was, you know, it's happened to you, I'm sure. I was jarred to such a state of awareness. You know, awareness of, okay, the guy has his hands in his pockets, awareness of how stupid I'd been, how I should start heading across the deserted street, underneath the silver bells and to the other decorated street. Well, he made a move in the same direction that I was. I was going across. He kind of was walking with me, looking at me. So I did something ridiculous and stupid that I don't recommend you do in the Christmas season or not. See, okay, in The Outsiders, there's a scene where Ponyboy Curtis is caught kind of away from his gang guys, the greasers, and his brothers, and the Socs kind of are surrounding him, and he looks in the street for a bottle to break if the Socs attack him. Well, okay, look, I'm a city guy, okay, but I'm not a greaser. I'm not close to a Soc. I'm not in a gang. My brother's not named Soda Pop, believe me. I am a guy in corduroy pants that are a little too short for me, that's still growing, that I might be able to direct a lost couple to the front door of the Academy of Music in Philadelphia if they get turned around after dinner at a restaurant. But I'm not, you know, I'm not a member of the Outsiders gang at quarter two. I didn't quite stay gold, Pony. I stepped into the gutter, and I picked up a beer bottle among the trash there. I know it's wrong. Craig, don't do it. If he'd rushed me, I'm sure I would have thrown it at him, screaming and run. I would be screaming like a second grader. I'd just throw it at him and run. But I picked it up like I'd read in 10th grade in a novel written by a girl. And I stare the guy down, and I did not get tough or anything, but I just, all I could get out was, get out of here. And thank God he did. Thank God. Santa and his sleigh helped me out, but he did. He mumbled something. Maybe I was just big enough and just had this bot. I don't know. He just split down the next street. And my heart was racing, and I was scared. And then, of course, I ran. I ran for blocks until I stopped. Just keep looking behind me to make sure he wasn't even walking slowly after me. And I still had the bottle in my hand. So I threw the bottle in a trash can, of course, because if I threw it back in the gutter, that would be double littering. And, you know, you don't want to litter right after almost being in a knockdown, drag-out, broken beer bottle fight. And I told you, I'm a guy. So it's 30 years later. Well, it's 30 some years later. I'm still telling it to you, though, you know, that's my Christmas memory of being 19. Though I've taken out the parts that used to be in the story, like when he said, you know, give me your wallet, punk. And I broke the bottle against the curb. And I said, come on. Do you want some of this, Jack? Because none of that stuff actually happened. He went away and I ran. Christmas time. So I'll tell you other scrapes I've had. Oh, I'll tell you. I have stories. I can tell you all of them. But, you know, most of them are very much like that one, where I just said, get out of here. And people thankfully listened to me. Because mostly, I've stayed gold. Thanks, Pony Boy. I stayed gold. But I'm here during my Christmas special. And I just... And that's the first memory I had for a Christmas special. How about... Well, no. Okay, it wasn't. It was Wanamaker's and the organ show and going to Santa and all of those things like in A Christmas Story. So they're wonderful memories. Tempered a little bit by racing down Market Street with a beer bottle in my hand. But at the end, not littering. So there must be some credit given there. But when I was a kid, Christmas specials were... It's like the Beverly Hillbillies. Maybe they still have it on TV Land, but the Beverly Hillbillies would go and visit Petticoat Junction for Christmas. And you just think, hey, how does Jed Clampett know the people at Petticoat Junction? And that was a magical time because no one would say, it's by the same producers. They're under contract. They have to go to Petticoat Junction. And Petticoat Junction is right next to where they shoot the Beverly Hillbillies. On the same lot, so it's easy. It's like a half a block walk, and they just cater for both sets. I didn't know that. I just thought that, you know, the Beverly Hillbillies knew Petticoat Junction, and the Partridge Family would have a Christmas special, and the Brady Bunch could talk about it, or something like that, you know, on a very special Brady Christmas. But at that time... As many of you know, some of you don't, but, you know, you got the Sears catalog. As the Beverly Hillbillies were visiting Petticoat Junction, you just read through the Sears catalog, making a long list of every single thing you possibly wanted, which, if Santa brought it for you, was going to cost somebody over $3,000. But you did the list anyway. So, but most, of course, top of the list... is Hot Wheels and Hot Wheels track. Now, Hot Wheels at that time were not these battery power things. You know, okay, I'm going to the... In my day, we had rocks, and you just threw them for entertainment. Oh, Og, you have thrown the rock farther than anyone. No, but now Hot Wheels have little rubber things. They spin, and they make the Hot Wheels car go through the thing. So you don't need gravity to do the loop, because with Hot Wheels track, the Hot Wheels track was orange. They had these little purple connectors things, and Hot Wheels was a scientific experiment because Hot Wheels was, you had to get up a stack of books or a table or something. You had to put the books on top of the Hot Wheels track to make the car go downhill. And then, of course, you put a loop the loop on the floor. The rest of the day was spent trying to get the correct height of the downhill for the loop-de-loop. Because too much height, too steep, the car will never make it. Boom, off the track, crash, and the tiny, tiny representation of you in the car is dead. Too little hill, you do it on a coffee table or an ottoman, and then the car comes off and it's not even close to enough juice to actually do the loop-de-loop. It just kind of goes up the one side and then the car goes in reverse and comes back. And then you're humiliated in front of all your cousins just as Christmas dinner is being served. And who wants that? What you needed was the exact hill to hit it, go down, through the loop-de-loop, out the other side, onto the rug, which was the brakes. Depending on shag rug or, you know, hardwood floor, it would go forever and hit the dog. Shag rug, perfect braking system, and it breaks within 1 foot. But that was most of what Christmas was about. Hot Wheels cars and TV specials. I remember, once I started playing the guitar, then I was watching just the musical specials. I was watching whatever, James Taylor. I was watching John Denver. John Denver had Christmas specials. the John Denver Christmas special. And who knows who he had on there? Jefferson Starship and Bing Crosby, something. You've seen that David Bowie, Bing Crosby song. That was what it was like. John Denver and Bob Hope, something utterly incongruous, but it was Christmas and it was a special, right? John Denver had this, I remember Christmas special, and John Denver was so authentic with his cowboy shirts and his glasses, and he's singing. I'm watching the Christmas special, and I like his music, and I'm playing the guitar, and I'm a young teenager playing the guitar, and Rocky Mountain High was one of the first songs I ever learned on the guitar. And then John Denver has this fake butterfly come down and land on his shoulder, something like that. The butterfly comes in, and he does the, "Hey, little fella, how you doing?" And the butterfly stand, "Hey, you know, it's Christmas or something." And you're thinking, dude, I'm behind your music 100%, and I'm learning the guitar too, but the fake butterfly is one step too far. So that was it. That was it. That was my memories of John Denver's Christmas. I actually went to a John Denver concert. I sat in the third row, and I loved it. I was a fan. I still am. I was recently on an airplane, and I have an iPod, and of course, like everybody, and I put my iPod on the little tray in front of me, and a young African-American gentleman, and he's got the hoodie on, and he's got all the he's got all the stuff of the kind of urban thing. It sounds really urban and together when I describe it, doesn't it? But young African-American gentleman with his hood on a plane that's already pretty warm, but I guess his head was cold. But he takes out my exact iPod, and he puts it on his little table in front of him. So we have the exact iPods, and me being, you know, the annoying white guy on the aisle, I say something like, "Oh, better not get those iPods confused," because and he just stares at me going, "Why do you say that? No, don't judge my music. You know, you could like my music. We could trade iPods." And I said, "You like John Denver?" He said, "All right, you got a point." So I still have John Denver on my iPod. So shoot me, okay? I went to a concert. I saw John Denver at the Spectrum in Philadelphia. I was sitting in the third row. I don't know how I got third row seats, but Starland Vocal Band opened for him. And they were from... they were weirdos from California. We were in, it was whatever, wintertime, I think, and Starland. Oh, it was wintertime because the lead singer of Starland Vocal Band wore overalls, you know, denim overalls with no shirt and had bare feet. And we just thought, is this dude a psycho or what? Bare feet? But it was, they were from California or Colorado or wherever. They were from the West. So it seemed like so freeform, man. I'm doing a concert and I'm not wearing a shirt or shoes. Just overall. And they sang Afternoon Delight, their one hit. And I got to say, hey, they were pretty good. It was a vocal band. They were good singers and everything. And that was it. Afternoon Delight, boom, they're off. John Denver's on. And I had a great time at a John Denver concert. So guilty as charged, Christmas people. But the radio has gone to 24-hour holiday music. Has yours? Yeah, it goes there about, what, September 18th? The radio station goes to 24-hour holiday music. We can't say Christmas, although they say Christmas in most of the songs. We can't say Christmas on the radio. I love the station. We put it, of course you put it on in the car the first couple days after Thanksgiving, maybe. You put on the Christmas station and you got lots and lots of Christmas music, 24 hours a day, all sung by Neil Diamond or Barbara Streisand to Jewish people, which is fine. There's nothing, you know, wrong with that, having them come, they told me, pa-rum-pa-pum-pum. I don't believe in him, pa-rum-pa-pum-pum. But I'll make some cash off him, pa-rum-pa-pum-pum. Well, but that's But it's a nice way to celebrate the holiday. And I just wanted to celebrate my Christmas with you. So a very Merry Christmas from me and everyone here at Wilson World America. I don't know what it's just me, basically. So and my family here at the fine Wilson World Studios.
It's Tom Wilson, the host of the show.
Silent night, Christmas Eve night, trying to plug in the Christmas tree lights. I stretch round the tree and I shatter some balls. Too many lights are plugged into the wall. And we have a blackout, and I step on a Christmas ball piece. Silent night, Christmas Eve night, trying to break up a family fight. Kids wired on candy canes getting so mean. Who gets to put Jesus in the nativity scene? They wrestle and break our toy savior, whose halo is a coat hanger piece. Christmas Eve night, working all night, but Barbie's new dream house won't assemble just right. Take Barbie's pool and insert in slot A. It doesn't fit and the plastic piece breaks. Freak out and go find the duct tape. It looks like Dad's not going to sleep. Jesus is born, new Christmas morn. 4 in the morning, wish I'd never been born. With jobs all completed, I sit for a break. At 5:17, all the kids are awake. I guess I'll just start up the coffee, but kids don't expect Daddy to speak. Christmas Day sky, memories fly to some Christmas time of decades gone by. Grandpa drinks bourbon and snaps his Kodak, while I whip my brother with some new Hot Wheels track. Turkey and stuffing and Reese's cups, it's cranberries, sweet tarts, and peas. Silent night, holy night, all is calm, all is bright. Bright-eyed young angels explode in the morn. 3,000 toys, oh yeah, Jesus is born. Have a wonderful Christmas with all your family and friends all in peace. Merry Christmas, everybody. Like every year, at one point, the pipe organ has to become quiet. The light show is over. Santa goes home. And we all have to put on our galoshes and make our way out through the snowbanks to try to find the car and get home. That's the first annual Big Pop Fun Christmas special. Thanks so much for listening. And myself, everybody here at Wilson World Studios wishes you a very Merry Christmas. And thanks for listening. Thanks to Emily Wilson for producing. Thanks to Chris Hardwick and Katie, everyone at Nerdist Industries. Thanks so much to McPherson Guitars, to Dean Markley Strings, which is what I use. And thanks especially to you. I do appreciate your listening. And I hope you come out to a show sometime and say hi. Thanks so much, and we'll talk to you again.
Now leaving Nerdist.com.